it in! The U.S. go up! What a goal from Carlos Bocanegra!
Lloyd will try a long hit! What a goal from Lloyd! This is spectacular! It's hit with no regard for humanity! Is this the moment for Shaqiri? Yes, it is! Switzerland! And Shaqiri has scored in the 90th minute! That was worth the price of admission alone!
This is Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm, DaspitLaw.com. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, fresh on the heels of the Killer Bees. Great show by them, by the way. I love them talking about the players that have eclipsed their sport, and they certainly came up with a bunch of great ones. All right, tonight we've got Austin in for Guillermo Lazo Romero producing tonight, so we appreciate Austin stepping in here tonight. You got Purdue-UConn a little bit later at 8:30, Astros and Rangers coming up after 7, and we've got a lot of soccer talk here tonight on a day where, talk about coverage. I'm not sure Caitlin Clark got as much coverage as the Eclipse, but boy, it was wall-to-wall today, and it was exciting for people, and from seeing people at the Indy 500, 50,000 people there, to a niece at college in the courtyard area. Pretty amazing stuff going on. All right. Tonight presented, as always, by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. We got a lot to talk about on this show. But first, on a little bit of a somber note, I want to dedicate tonight's show to a great friend, producer in Major League Soccer, was also a producer here in Houston with the Houston Dynamo. Up north with FC Dallas, Apple TV, knew him from back in my days starting as a commentator doing indoor soccer. Jim Feldman was with Apple TV as of late. Jim passed away Saturday morning, alerted by his wife Marcy to all his soccer TV friends like myself. So to Jim Feldman, rest in peace, and this is a guy that's going to be forever missed. He couldn't have met a more genuine guy. And then, of course, as we all know here at ESPN 97.5, Fred Fowler was laid to rest this past weekend. So tough stuff these days, no question about it. All right, call-in number tonight, 713-780-3776, 713-780-3776. There's a lot to get after here tonight. I got Premier League talk, Old Firm derby, Dutch Eredivisie rivalry match, Premier League results, stretch run right now, by the way. Dynamo go down to Chicago, self-inflicted road loss in that one at Soldier Field. So a lot to get after here tonight. We'll break down the Dynamo. I've got Brian Chiaretta of American Soccer Now. He's following all the U.S. players that are in various leagues. We bounce around a number of topics here tonight. He's going to be covering the Olympics this summer extensively. So you'll like the interview with Brian Chiaretta tonight on the show. So a lot to get after. But I'm going to start off with this, what was, again, a bar-raising night for women's college basketball. And, again, I think women's sports in general. So South Carolina, I mean, remarkable season. Undefeated. Dawn Staley wins another national title, 38-0. What a coach. Knocks off Caitlin Clark and Iowa. Fantastically competitive game. Crazy start to the game with Iowa going on a wicked run. The game had runs. Two excellent coaches and programs. Just a fantastic time, I think, for women's college basketball. South Carolina definitely had the depth, the size, I think. The young lady from Brazil, Camila Cardoso, had 17 rebounds. She was just too much. She looked like kind of the Jolly Green Giant amongst the Lilliputians, you know. She just was dominant there. She was altering shots. She also had 15 points. So she dominated. But look, again, for me, this is about the celebration and just the crazy amount of eyeballs on this. And I think that's what got the guys on the Killer Bees talking about people transcending sport, even though I didn't hear the beginning of it. I'm thinking they were talking about Caitlin Clark and women's basketball, all-time leading scorer in college basketball history. I will say this is the reason why it's connected with me, and I said it on the last show. It's the weaponry of passing, rebounding, court knowledge, wanting responsibility, all these different things. And then, of course, you know, one of the big things is the fact that she's moved the range of the three-pointer way back, much like Steph Curry did in the NBA. So I will also say the way this young lady handles herself under all this pressure is pretty crazy. I mean, these games were like, they were treating these teams like rock stars coming into this arena. And the amount of attention that it's absolutely drawn, which is only positive for women's sports. So I've also been taking I've taken it to heart her ability to speak and basically speak with eloquence and speak respectfully. And I like some of the sound bites after the game. She lauded the coach of South Carolina, obviously, which was a nice thing, Dawn Staley. I mean, look, I mean, she's a crazy good coach, right? What she's doing. But here's Caitlin Clark, number 14 on, you know, after this career is over, she's going to go number one to Indiana in the WNBA draft. But what she will look back on, this is soundbite 14.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is, you know, it's really hard to win these things. I think I probably know that better than most people by now. And to be so close twice, it definitely hurts. But at the same time, like, you know, we were right there. We battled. We took down some really great teams to get back to this point. And it's something that's really hard to do. And, you know, I think when I think about women's basketball going forward, you know, obviously it's just going to continue to grow, whether it's at the WNBA level, whether it's at the college level. Like, everybody sees it. Everybody knows. Everybody sees the viewership numbers. When you're given an opportunity, women's sports just kind of thrives. And I think that's been the coolest part for me on this journey is just, you know, we start our season playing in front of 55,000 people in Kinnick Stadium. And now we're ending it probably playing in front of 15 million people or more on TV. You know, it just continues to get better and better and better. And that's never going to stop. You know, when you continue to give them the platform, like, this, things like this are just going to continue to happen.
It's a crazy good time for women's sports right now, by the way. So she's inspirational to me. No whining. And now think of young kids that are going to pick up basketball because of her. Good for basketball. Good for role modeling. Gracious and poised when she talks about her journey and under the microscope. By the way, it's after you lost in a national championship game. And it's twice. And that's not an easy thing to do, to be able to collect yourself. So personally, that's going to have me watching more women's college basketball in the future. I already watch and have done a lot of women's soccer during my career in commentary. In youth coaching, I coached women at the youth level. And then on to calling games, NCAA National Championships, NWSL, Women's World Cups, you name it. And I've seen it grow remarkably. And this is another platforming moment led by this amazing young woman. Here she is. This is Soundbite 15, Caitlin Clark, on how women's sports can capitalize on this moment.
This team came along at a really good time, whether it was social media, whether it was NIL, whether it was our games being nationally televised. I mean, we've played on Fox, NBC, CBS, ESPN. I mean, you just go down the list, and we've been on every national television, you know, channel. And I think that's been one of the biggest things that has helped us. And I think no matter what sport it is, give them the same opportunities, believe in them the same, invest in them the same, and things are really going to thrive. I mean, you see it with other sports, and I'm a big fan of other sports. Like, I try to support as much as I can. And I think that's the biggest thing is, you know, continue to invest your time, money, and resources there, and continue to show up for those people and give them the opportunities. And, you know, I think that's what's going to help drive women's sports forward in the future.
You got a spokesperson, I'll tell you that much. You got a spokesperson for women's sports right there. It's pretty remarkable. It's been a lot of fun watching it. Tonight we'll take a look at the men's side of it. And I would just say this, I don't know where people's self-respect has gone, to be honest with you. Some of the stuff that I accidentally stumble on because I have to use the internet. But when I hear people saying things about this tournament that breaches all kinds of things, it's pretty pathetic, number one. Number two, I do kind of get why people are upset South Carolina's not getting talked about more, but you're not going to usurp Caitlin Clark at this point. The good news is she helped you play in front of over 15 million. Okay, so I think you got to take the good with the bad. All boats rise with the tide. She's going to be great for the WNBA. Hate seeing jealousy and infighting then, don't eat your own. This woman's helping everybody in all sports, and she's only 22 years old. So good stuff. All right, let's go to a couple of real big rivalry matches in the world here. And we don't normally talk a whole lot about the Dutch Eredivisie or the Scottish Premier League, but let's go to international soccer. And, you know, in the Netherlands, Feyenoord and Ajax are huge, I guess I can use the word hated rivals. Feyenoord beat Ajax 6-0 this past weekend. PAX Stadium. Igor Paksho. This is one of the goals. This is the opening goal in a game that, by the way, I don't think he scored until the 34th minute, so it was 0-0 up to 34 minutes. Here's soundbite number 7. Feyenoord would then go on to win 6-0. Here's the goal from Paksho in Dutch.
Te veel tijd genomen. Zoveelste keer dat gebeurt achterin bij Ajax. En nu wordt het afgeslacht door Paksho. Het kon niet uitblijven.
And by the way, we'll take your phone calls tonight, 713-780-3776. You can weigh in on Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark, you can weigh in on anything here tonight soccer-wise. So 6-0 for Feyenoord over Ajax. Times are dark for Ajax. We'll talk a little bit more about that on Wednesday night. Rangers versus Celtic, one of the great rivalries. They call it the Old Firm. Here is a game that ends 3-3. It's absolutely crazy. The way this game ends and the back and forth in the final minutes and the goals that are scored. So Maida scores first for Celtic in the first minute of the game. It's 1-0. O'Reilly for Celtic, a penalty kick. It's 2-0 after 34 minutes. Tavernier scores for Rangers in the opening of the second half, 55th minute, 2-1. Sima in the 86th makes it 2-2 for Rangers. Ida for Celtic puts them up in the 87th, 3-2. They're thinking they're going to win it, right? It's over. And then Rabi Matondo, 3 minutes into stoppage time, keeps them in contention for the title. This is soundbite number 8.
Rangers desperate to keep this alive. Lundstrom. Matondo. Matondo!
So it's always a two-horse race in Scotland, right, in the Premier League with Rangers and Celtic. Rangers trailed Celtic by 8 points in January. They have now cut that gap to 1 point with a game in hand after moving to 74 points from 31 matches. So no telling how important that tying goal is ultimately going to be. Manchester United 2-2 with Liverpool. Big one. And in the end, it helps Arsenal and Manchester City in a very big way. So Luis Diaz, we all know, great Colombian player, is going to be here in Houston. Here's Diaz, soundbite number 1 in the 23rd minute.
Avalon points with Manchester City. Robertson. And Nunez, and it's Diaz turning, sweeping, and scoring.
Bruno Fernandes. After a bad ball in midfield, hits one from like 45 yards out into the empty net. Fernandez equalizer, 50th minute, soundbite 2.
Quansah. And that's careless from the youngster. And Kelleher was off his line. And Manchester United are back on terms in the most unlikely of fashions.
Now, one of the young burgeoning talents of Manchester United, as you all know out there, Kobbie Mainoo, is a kid that, you know, along with Garnacho, there's a lot of hope around these young players at Old Trafford. So soundbite number 3, Mainoo puts Manchester United ahead in the 67th. This is a spectacular goal. He actually wasn't playing that well in this game, but he produces the most exciting moment of the game.
Garnacho. Wan-Bissaka. Mainoo! A career-defining moment, perhaps.
Salah from the penalty spot, soundbite 4 in the 84th minute.
Old Trafford, tight in the balance, trailing to your greatest rivals. And time fast running out. It's Salah! and it is two apiece at Old Trafford.
Big goal there for Liverpool. In the end, it's a 2-2 draw, and it's probably a draw that suits Arsenal and Manchester City a little bit better. And, of course, when you talk about Liverpool now, they could have won out and won the title. Well, now it's game on for everybody. Right now you got Arsenal on 71, Liverpool on 71, and City on 70. Doug Cardinal sent this text to me. He said, from the moment they took off Garnacho, I knew they would concede. It's been a repeating theme all year. At some point, you have to realize that sitting back isn't working. So many points lost from a winning position over and over. Juan Bissaka error had no business doing that. All right. I think we're, would you say we're up on a hard break here, Austin? I think it's time to break. All right, let's do a break here. As we go to break, though, a couple of things here. LamontBrands.com, get your Soccer Matters T-shirts and hats there to benefit the 501c charity, the Snowdrop Foundation. And then also, don't forget, get out to Hugh O'Connor's Pub, Marquee Entertainment Center, daily specials, whiskey and beer offerings, off the charts there. They got really, really good traditional English pub food. Bangers and mash, fish and chips, shepherd's pie. Get in there, say hello to David. The place is pristine. Great for sports watching. It'll be packed tonight, much like Pitch 25 for tonight's men's national championship between Purdue and UConn. All right, as we head to break right now, I got a four-pack of tickets. Speaking of women's sports, four-pack of tickets for the Houston Dash Friday night. So you're going to get four tickets for this against Washington. Caller number four at 713-780-3776. 713-780-3776. Back in a flash.
Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
Ah, with the police great back in the day. I saw him three times. All right, welcome back to Soccer Matters, ESPN 97.5. Let's continue on the Manchester United-Liverpool front here. Before we get to that, though, just want to remind you again about just the amazing content of soccer we have coming through Houston. Now, this is after we're talking about the Houston Dynamo and Houston Dash, who have their, you know, league schedules and Leagues Cup coming. Copa America, June 22nd, Mexico, Jamaica, June 24th, Colombia, Paraguay, July 4th. We got a quarterfinal. Now, if Argentina and Lionel Messi win their group, they will be here in Houston for that. Prior to that, in College Station, you got Brazil playing Mexico, which is pretty incredible. I mean, that's a legendary moment for Kyle Field to host the five-time World Cup winners, Brazil and the famous Canary jerseys. Then you come back to, I think it's August 3rd, you've got Inter Miami, which is Lionel Messi's club team. So you got Messi, speaking of guys that have transcended a sport, you got Lionel Messi coming to play with Inter Miami. And get this, it's against Tigres of Mexico, which we all know there's so many people from Monterrey, Mexico that reside in Houston that are huge fans of Tigres. So Tigres will be coming here, and they will be taking on Inter Miami, and that's going to be off the charts. Now, you can get tickets. You can find more information about all these games out at LSSE.net. LSSE.net. Suites, you name it. Parking, all types of tickets, differing levels. LSSE.net. Okay, so this is a crazy summer. You're going to have to make choices. I don't know if you can get to everything, but you're going to have to make choices. And that's why we were giving away some Houston Dash tickets for Friday when they get back in action after the international window, where they'll be taking on the Washington Spirit. Okay, so we mentioned the fact, 2-2 draw, Liverpool-Manchester United. Here's soundbite number five. This is Erik ten Hag of Manchester United post-match.
I think only details. And I think the most important was that we, in decisive moments, first half, we lost the duels and our decision making. In the half spaces, we were not quick enough thinking. And well, we encouraged the team in halftime that you have to win those duels because it will be decisive. The moment you win those duels, especially if you can then make a change to the far side half space, and then you have greater overload on the back line and you will create. And first half already, was this the case? So we didn't take advantage from it. But second half we did. And we needed a moment in the game to punish a mistake of Liverpool, but that got us back in the game.
So we heard their duels, not winning enough duels, very indecisive, creating overloads. You'll hear all coaches talk about all these things in the modern game now. You'll hear Ben Olsen talk about these things for the Houston Dynamo. You know, this is common. It was an interesting watch. It ended 2-2. Now let's go to soundbite number 6, the Liverpool head man, Jurgen Klopp.
Yeah, it was obviously mixed. So, like, happy with a lot of parts of the game. Being 1-0 up at Old Trafford and having a 15-0 shooting stat was incredible. It says to immediately again, okay, it's obviously something around. The finishing was either in exceptional goalkeeping, which was the case for one situation with Dom Szoboszlai. It was an incredible save. Besides that, we could have been calmer in moments or a bit clearer in moments. That's fine, you're 1-0 up. So, still fine. Come outside and still controlling the game, yes. And then we give the ball away. So that's how it is. And then you first have these mistakes happen before and will happen after today as well. So that's not a problem. First have to use it like Bruno did. It was a pretty exceptional finish. In this mood lift in the stadium, atmosphere lift in the stadium, they scored pretty much the second. And then we controlled the game again. So we got the penalty and scored an equaliser and could have scored more before, after. So we just could have. We played really good in so many moments and we had 5-10 minutes period. So like they score and the second goal, obviously we don't push up properly. That's why they find him in between the lines, blah, 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 they can turn. And then in the end, it ends up with an incredible finish as well. But after that, we were again in charge. Yeah, that now you can say if you have that much of a dominance in a long parts of the game, you should win the game. Yeah, that's true. But you all are long enough in football that doesn't mean you will win. That just means you should.
So that was Jurgen Klopp of Liverpool. And, if he wants to take a year off on break, he would be a highly popular analyst calling games, I'm sure, in studio breaking them down. As we know, it's going to be the end for Klopp at Liverpool at the end of the season. All right, so we also have tomorrow, by the way, UEFA Champions League. Not going to want to miss these. Arsenal-Bayern Munich, to think that Arsenal's competing for the title and a lot of these teams competing for titles, but they're in a much tougher race than maybe Spain or that Real Madrid's in. Bayern Munich's not going to win the title in Germany. That's going to be Bayer Leverkusen, who's still just this remarkable story under Xabi Alonso. So you got Arsenal, Bayern Munich tomorrow. You got Real Madrid and City. Anthony Rudiger has come out and said that the battle with Erling Haaland is going to be personal. So I like that. He's sticking it on the bulletin board, though, for Haaland. So let's see if he can be manhandled again. If you remember last year, he did a very good job in the first leg against Erling Haaland. He didn't play in the second leg. Haaland didn't score in the first leg when they met last year, Real Madrid and Manchester City. Then in the second leg, Rudiger didn't play, and then City then pretty much blew out Real Madrid. So we got that tomorrow. Then on Wednesday, you got PSG and Kylian Mbappe against Barcelona, Atletico Madrid, and Dortmund. All right, let's move on to the Houston Dynamo. Chicago Fire, 2-1 win over the Houston Dynamo. Two self-inflicted goals given up by the Dynamo in this one. Dynamo are currently sixth in the West. Look, I think we all know they're definitely a team that's dependent upon winning games 1-0 at this moment. They've only had one two-goal game, and that was the comeback recently at the stadium against the San Jose Earthquakes. Conversely, though, to remind us of how good of a defending team it is, they've only given up three multi-goal games against teams this year. You say to yourself, what does that tell you? Well, it tells you it's similar to last year. You got to win the tight games. And there's nothing wrong with being a team, I guess, that goes on and continues to win tight games. But, boy, it means the margins are slim, and it means you can't make mistakes. And last night, both the goals came off mistakes. We're going to talk about those in a minute. But they were kind of the masters of winning these one-goal games last year. Question would be this year, how do you change that? And right now, that's Sebas Ferreira, who's injured again, which that's a worry. And that's Hector Herrera coming back. And as you heard in our last interview with Ben Olsen, how is he reintegrated into the team? And that's to build off of last year. Or do you just maybe go about it the same way? You're always going to be in games with this collective defending. They had 59% of the possession against Chicago. A lot of the numbers were in their way. The road is always interesting. Played with the two withdrawn forwards. We'll get into that in a second, but let's just kind of go through the goal scoring. So penalty kick is given. I think it was on a corner or set piece. Franco Escobar is just basically bear hugging. I don't know if it's Kuipers or the center back. He's bear hugging somebody in the back, inside the box. He doesn't let go. And the guy just says, you know what? If he's not going to let go, I'm going to fall down. I'm going to draw a penalty. And that's exactly what happens. It's not a smart play. And it puts you in the hole. And then you get the Swiss international, Shaqiri, their big star. He comes to the penalty spot. Soundbite number 9. Here's what it sounded like.
Shaqiri steps up and rifles it in. A dream start for the Chicago Fire. And Shedlin Shaqiri shows off his high noon accuracy.
Aliyu, who is now the Dynamo leading scorer with 3 of their 7 goals so far in Major League Soccer, he scores in the 65th minute. This is a back pass that gets deflected. Aliyu gets it right around the edge of the box, and this is the beauty of winning the ball close to an opponent's goal. It leads to an immediate shooting opportunity, and he buries it. It's a fantastic goal. Here's Aliyu. Soundbite number 10, 65th minute, ties it up.
Game on the road, you're probably going to be first place in your conference. Houston, look
at away. Aliyu with a strike! Ibrahim Aliyu buries that one, and parity is restored!
So then, at 1-1 here now, the Dynamo thinking, okay, we could potentially get away with a road point here, minimum. Ball lets hit over the top, puts in Brian Gutierrez. Now, he's in a bit of a foot race here with Griffin Dorsey. And Steve Clark comes flying off. He elects to come off his line. He thinks he's going to get there. He doesn't get there. Gutierrez is going to lob him. You got to put this one on the goalkeeper. And look, this is a guy that's put the Dynamo in positions to win games many times. He's in a position where there's risk-taking. He's trying to be a covering player in this moment. Just can't get there. Soundbite 11, Brian Gutierrez, the game-winning goal for Chicago. This comes in the 78th minute.
Shaqiri looking for Guti. Brian Gutierrez over the top. Oh, it's in! It's in!
Yeah, so tough one there. Gutierrez took the finish well on an on-rushing goalkeeper. Got it over him and under the crossbar, and it added a bit to the wow factor of that. So Chicago wins it 2-1. Here's the Houston Dynamo head coach Ben Olsen post-match.
We have enough chances to get something out of this game, and second half I thought was we played really well and put ourselves in a position to get something, get the goal back after it was, again, and maybe PK, maybe not. You know, you don't see those called much, but apparently they're going to start calling those where the attacker and the defender are grabbing, and again, a little bit of a harsh penalty in my mind, but it is what it is, and then we come back, and a great goal from Ibrahim, who continues to stay hot, and then we got to get something out of the game, and we foul up a play pretty routine big ball, and we just don't deal with it. And then we didn't put out the fire. So a tough loss, but again, we'll move on. Overall, the effort was there. We created the right chances, and it wasn't our night.
Three wins, two losses, and a draw for the Dynamo. Six in the West. They're taking on Minnesota, who's currently in fourth at 3-1-2. Here's Griffin Dorsey. Let's get a little bit of sound from him. Soundbite number 13, the Dynamo defender.
You know, there's definitely a fight in the group, but we don't want to find ourselves down in those environments, in those moments. And that's something that all of us collectively need to work on. But once again, this group's got a lot of fight, and we're never gonna shy away from a battle.
Well, that's one thing that's been firmly established. If you talk about this year and last year, is that this is a collective unit. These guys are fighters. They're competing every game. There's no let off there, which is a good thing, because that's how you make the playoffs in MLS. If you got that, you got a lot. Now, I would say 15 shots, 5 on target, 9 crosses, more of the ball. Yes, we had our chances, but, you know, it is kind of a reoccurring theme from last year. You just wish the Dynamo could sprinkle in some games where they score more goals, but I think so much of this is going to be dependent on Sebas Ferreira and him returning. Now, in this game, you had Amin Bassi and Sebastian Kowalczyk playing as kind of false nines. You know, they want the ball to their feet generally coming back, so you don't get a lot of vertical runs from those guys. Sometimes opponents can then squeeze the game. Aliyu is your guy that's making the diagonal runs to get in behind, and the Dynamo hit that angled ball a lot to him because that's a pretty successful place for him. They had 59% of the possession, but two big mistakes were ultimately punished. It's the way it goes sometimes. You heard Jurgen Klopp just talking about it a minute ago. No Mikael in that game, by the way. No Sebas Ferreira, so that's one to put a circle on going to Minnesota. But again, the goal-scoring department, that's the big question mark. And maybe I shouldn't be talking about it as much. Maybe it's just, you know, we have to accept this is a team that's going to try to win games 1-0 all the time. Teams have done that. I mean, that's a good place to be, that you can win 1-0 games. Although you might, you know, you do want to win some games a little bit more comfortably, take the pressure off a little bit. 7 goals scored in 6 games, only conceded 6. So that's kind of where the Houston Dynamo are at this point. Now, I wanted to play a soundbite, and I should have played it when we were talking about Caitlin Clark and NCAA women's basketball and women's sports. But I do want to play this, and it's somewhat related. This is the great UConn coach. Now, again, if you think of crazy storylines, you had the rematch of the national title game, right, with Iowa and LSU. Then you had, you know, Iowa going up against the master, Gino Auriemma. And then, of course, you have an undefeated team going up against Caitlin Clark and her great Iowa team. So you had three really great, great storylines in a row going on there. But here's Auriemma, and I want you to hear this sound, because this is about the portal and the ability of the college player now to change universities and colleges and how it affects the coach-player relationship. Here it is. Soundbite 16.
The average coach out there, though, who's not where I am, you can't do your job anymore. And people can say, you got to change with the times. How does changing with the times help you have better relationships with your players when it's all transactional now? So what kind of relationship can you have with somebody that is telling you, I might be here 1, maybe 2, maybe 3, maybe 4, or I might be at 4 schools in 4 years? And it has nothing to do with the money. Forget the money part. This is about the ability that you can just walk out anytime you want. So how do you coach in an environment where the players feel like they owe you nothing and you owe them everything? What kind of relationship can you have?
No better I mean, that's truth right there. That's truth. We need to hit a hard break here. We're coming up with Brian Shiretta next from American Soccer Now. That was Gino Auriemma talking about how difficult coaching is going to become now. Cactus Music, my friend Quinn, get over to Cactus Music. The best in vinyl selection, new and used CDs, books, everything music, rock and roll. It's like a music history lesson walking in that store. Cactus Music. All right, we'll take a break. Brian Shiretta, American Soccer Now, is next.
Tonight, I'm gonna have myself.
You're listening to Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Brought to you by the Daspit Law Firm. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Glenn Davis.
All right, final segment tonight of Soccer Matters on ESPN 97.5. Hey, by the way, get your tickets now for the 2024 League's Cup. You got Inter Miami, Lionel Messi coming here, and they're coming right into the heart of Tigris country here in Houston, Texas. Be a part of the action at Energy Stadium. It's August 3rd, 7 p.m. Central Time. And, of course, Tigris roots and support runs thick and heavy in Houston, Texas. So that's League Cups. And by the way, League's Cup, as everybody knows now, it's Liga MX, MLS teams, 29 clubs, Canadian teams as well. Don't wait. Tickets going fast for this exciting event. Visit lsse.net for tickets, parking, suites, opportunities. That's lsse.net. By the way, you get your Copa America tickets over there as well. You get your Brazil and Mexico tickets and College Station over there as well. Sick. Just really sick, amazing content coming through Houston. As we welcome in Brian Shiretta of American Soccer Now, you can follow him on X at Brian Shiretta, S-C-I-A-R-E-T-T-A, writer extraordinaire, following everything when it comes to the top talent in the U.S. Let's start. Brian, first off, a hello to you. You're safe in New Jersey from the earthquake.
Yeah, earthquake and now eclipse. So we are dealing with all kinds of biblical stuff here and dealing with it as best we can. So it's fun.
All right, let's start with Christian Pulisic. Fantastic goal. I saw you tweet out. You thought this is one of the best goals you've seen from him at AC Milan. 3-0 over Lecce, 72,000 fans. What struck me was the fans, kind of chanting his name. But it's a 10-goal season for the first time for him in major European competition.
Yeah, look, I think he's had a great season. This move has worked out better than I thought. And what's cool about this game was that he played in the number 10 position. He wasn't out on the wings. I thought overall, when you take out the goal, I thought he missed a couple passes here and there. You could tell it's not his usual position, but one where he can really grow from if they elect to keep him there. So I think it was just a good game all around from him. And, Musa looked pretty good off the bench. But, I think, Christian's been great.
Playing in the 10, very different. You're receiving the ball in at different angles. You got players closing it down right, left, front, center, back.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting watching him play there. Do you think he'll play there Thursday against Roma in the Europa League?
It's a good question. It's certainly possible. I think he keeps himself in contention to be playing there. And I think, the Scudetto is out of reach. So it's now is a good chance as any if they're going to consider him permanently there. I tend to think he's going to be a winger, but it's just the body of his work throughout his entire career. But maybe this is something where you can see an extended run at, and I think it would be very interesting.
Brian Shiretta joining us. You can get his writings at American Soccer Now. American Soccer Now. Who else, maybe a little bit under the radar, jumps out to you in Europe this past weekend?
I think it wasn't a great game, result this, but I think that Tanner Tessman has done well in Serie B. I think he's looking at a move upward in his career after the season. Even if they go up, I think that he's going to be probably transferring to someplace bigger and better. Just on the body of his work. And I thought Emmanuel Sabi, the winger for Le Havre, he scored again, a penalty that he drew. you know, he's turned into a very good winger, particularly on the defensive side of things. He's not always there offensively, but to fit into a top league defensively, he's been very good, and they're going to need that down the stretch because Le Havre's is in a very tough relegation zone. But he's a guy who's not getting any national team discussion. He's not in line for a call up, but you know, he's doing well in France's top league. So I think that that's certainly something worth saying. It caught your eye. I think it was generally a quiet weekend for Americans abroad, but certainly Sabi bucked that trend.
Tanner Tessman, FC Dallas product. Just take me into, do you have any idea some of the teams that are they're showing interest in Tessman?
No, I would imagine that it would be Syria. When you look at like what he's in their backyard. He's in the vicinity of a lot of big clubs there. He plays that center midfield position. Well, he brings an athleticism and a physical edge there too. And he can play the six and play the eight. I think you could look at like one of the top teams in some of those middle leagues, like the Eredivisie or Belgium. Wouldn't surprise me, but if I'm betting, I would think Serie A would be probably more in line than most.
All right, let's speaking of Tessman, he should be a part of the Olympic team this summer in France. U.S. will be in Group A under Marko Mitrovic. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the Olympic team. Some of the players that you think, because you're going to be covering it extensively, some of the players that you think, you know, the American listening public right now and viewing public and soccer fans should really be focused on.
Yeah, I think obviously we talked about Tanner and then his Venezia teammate Gianluca Buzio, who's homegrown from Sporting Kansas City, I think will be in the midfield. Same thing with Jack McGlynn of the Philadelphia Union and Aiden Morris of the Columbus Crew, who had a great goal over the weekend. I think that kind of makes up your midfield trio, midfield quadro, you know, the four players in the midfield, three of them will play. And I think, Brian Reynolds and Griffin Yao from Westerlo in Belgium will be on the team. Yao is a remarkable story. No one had him close to being on the radar for this team, but he's done really well in Belgium after leaving DC United. And now he scored a great goal against France during the last international window. So I think that puts him in potential now to not just be in the contention, but to make the team. And, you know, it's very it's very competitive there. I think Paxton Aaronson is a guy who's going to be heavily relied on too. The Tessies, Brendan Aaronson's brother, same thing with Kevin Paredes. And then John Tolkien of the Red Bulls is at left back. I think it's an interesting goalkeeping situation because I think they got two very good goalkeepers, three, but only two will make the team. I think Chris Brady at Chicago is very good. Gaga Slonina, who's gotten some national team, he's been in the mix there a little bit, and he's at Eupen in Belgium. And then I think Patrick Schulte of the Crew, who led them to the title last year, could very well end up being a starter. So it's not short on talent. It's just good, interesting to see how the team came together. But getting that 2-2 draw against France in the window was very big.
Brian, tell us a little bit about Marko Mitrovic and how much is this, you know, Olympic squad sort of mirror the full U.S. men's national team under Greg Berhalter?
I think it's he's a guy who is Serbian, naturalized American citizen. He followed around Veljko Paunovic a lot and he was on the assistant there when his assistant when Serbia won the U-20 World Cup in 2015. And then he was with Marko in Chicago Fire, then Reading. And then he kind of broke off into his own here with this job. And I think, he's done a nice job. He was the U.S. U-19 coach before this, so he knows the players. Yeah, and I think it does mirror a lot. I mean, he likes to play out of the 4-3-3, that formation. The stylistically, they're pretty the same. But, yeah, it's interesting because there is a high degree of players who on this Olympic team who do have caps with the full national team. So they kind of know what is expected of them at the higher levels, you know, like Tanner being one and Buzio being another. I think they have a good working relationship. He's based in Chicago. He's with the Fire beforehand. And he's been very effective with working with young U.S. players. I thought he did a very good job with the U19s. That really helped him out. So, yeah, same style and the playing pool, player pool's coming together. I think the next big question now is the overage players. How does he get those into the – he has yet to get them involved. And you need a lot of leadership and skill from these players.
Who do you think they'll be? Who would you lean to? So many choices.
I think Walker Zimmerman. They need two center backs because the age-eligible center backs aren't great. I think Walker Zimmerman is one because he's based locally and they could get his release. Captain the U.S. national team at times, and he's played in the World Cup. I think the other center back could be Mark McKenzie or James Sands, depending on release issues there. And then I think the other one, my guess would be Brandon Vasquez at forward, who's doing good things in Monterey. I think you could probably get him released because he's based in Liga MX, and the Olympics overlaps with League's Cup, not Liga MX. So I think that favors getting a release from him there. And I think Monterey would probably really like it to see him involved with the U.S. in some capacity there, get that international, build up that international resume a bit. So, those are some of the names I think we're looking at. But I think, two center backs and a number nine are probably the positionally where those overagers will go to.
And you bring up a very good point about getting players released, and you're not going to get some of the players from the bigger clubs involved in this. Big clubs are
And I don't think you're going to see any overlap between the Olympic roster and the Copa America roster. And something with the Europeans have to deal with too, with the Euros. I mean, you're probably asking a lot for a player to play in the Euros and the Olympics or the Copa America and the Olympics. It's probably an independent roster. So I think the Olympics 2028, I think, is going to look very, very different, where the high profile players will want to go from the U.S. because there won't be a Copa America. At least there's not planned to be one with the U.S. involvement. So, I think it's a little bit of a tough thing, but, that's kind of why you're not looking at like your Pool Six or your Adams and McKennies and those guys.
Realistic choices. You positioned it nice there. We're talking to Brian Chiaretta at Brian Chiaretta, SCIARETTA on X American Soccer. Now let's go to Greg Berhalter and the U.S. national team and the striker position, right? Okay. So we got Fowler and Balogun. We got Haji Wright. We got Ricardo Pepi. We got Josh Sargent. We got others. There really does not seem to be one player that's fully trusted by Greg Berhalter yet. Is this something that I think we're just going to ride into the distance until somebody really emerges, that these choices are basically going to come based on form, tactics, opponent? They are very differing strikers in a lot of different ways. Is that kind of the way you see it with that position right now?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's questions regarding all of them, I think, this summer, how they perform at the Copa is going to be important. Let's say if Balogun, I know he had a good game, not this weekend, but the weekend before. But if his season kind of goes lackluster and he doesn't crush it at the Copa America, then do you really go into World Cup preparations with him on the team if Josh Sargent continues to crush it? The thing that makes it tough is because we haven't really looked at everybody yet. I mean, Josh hasn't been looked at since the World Cup and since his real revival there too. And I know he's been, dealing with injuries. He's been playing for some pain. And, Haji plays mostly out on the wing. He does cut in a lot, but it's a little bit of a different role. It's tough. I think there will eventually be some weaning out. They will eventually have to focus in on a couple of people for these important friendlies that will be coming up over the next 2 years to prepare for the World Cup. But that being said, I think it's too early to do so. It's pretty much ride the hot hand and see who develops chemistry with the main group of people. But, I'm still itching to see. Until Josh Sargent gets a real run out here with this team after his recent revival, it's kind of tough to say, because his numbers have been the best of the bunch when you look at, like, per minute, per game ratio in terms of scoring and contributing at the club level. And I think Norwich is also a little bit of a cut above, figure Haji plays, but yeah, Balogun has a tough shot because, he was brought in to replace a striker who was out with an ACL injury. And then that striker will be returning in the preseason. So, he's not a lock starter heading into next year too at Monaco. So it's going to be tough.
A lot of challenges. We're on the outside always, who is it? Who is it? And really, it's kind of a wait and see thing. Just based on the weekends, we can always make judgments. We can make judgments based on the quality of leagues and defenses they're playing against as well, right?
Yeah, of course. And the style-wise too. Who needs chemistry with the players around them? Who can create for himself? Who's good in the air? Who can handle crosses? Who drifts too far back into the midfield? Who's better in on set pieces? A lot of ifs, ands, and buts about this position too. And obviously we're going to wait and see. Also, I didn't mention, but Ricardo Pepi and his playing time. I mean, that's got to improve a little bit too. I think it will at some point. But does PSV believe that he is the guy to replace a guy like Luc de Jong? I mean, like, those are huge shoes to fill as the starting striker for PSV, what he's done this year. Pepe's done well in limited minutes, but, look, those are limited minutes at typically towards the end of games against tired opponents. Can he do what Luc de Jong does? Because that's what's needed at PSV. I don't know. It's a good position to have. A lot of guys are in good positions, good situations, but they still have questions they have to answer, and not all will. I mean, some will be good, some will be bad, and I think that's going to go a long way towards 2026 and who will feature there.
Yeah, and could come down to specific things, maybe even Berhalter wants, who runs the channels better, whose holdup plays mm-hmm. better, who's better in the air.
Right.
There's so many factors that go into this and for a coach and a coaching staff. All right, we're talking to Brian Chiaretta here, at Brian Chiaretta, S-C-I-A-R-E-T-T-A. He's a great follow. Check his stuff out at American Soccer Now. MLS Board of Governors, tomorrow meeting in L.A. The thought here is this is to discuss investment rules, more money invested in players, maybe the changing of the DP rule or under-22s. I think when we look at this, we are seeing now the American player thriving in Europe, going to Europe. We're seeing, in my opinion, we're seeing a little bit less of the American player in positions of influence in Major League Soccer. So I think this is something that has to happen from MLS, one from the standpoint of just maybe protecting, keeping a couple of the younger players earlier on in the league and forming that balance, because you still want players going over there. But how do you see this and what do you expect out of that meeting?
Yeah, I think it's always an interesting thing. People try, do you want MLS to take off all the strings and go for it with terms of salary caps and all that stuff? And part of me says, yeah, you could make a better league if you do. But part of me says no, because if you really go for it, you can make a better league. But is it worth being a better league if you're not good at developing young players and giving them opportunities on the field? And I could live with a league that's maybe not as good as it could be, but it's better for the American player. That's such a unique opportunity to be able to be part of the important developmental paths of Tyler Adams and Alfonso Davies and those types too. But that being said, more investment's good. I'm kind of interested to see. I like it when they bring in the younger players. The U22 initiative has been one of my favorite rules, and the young DP rules. You got to move two ways, forward or backwards, and you can't really stand still. So I imagine something's going to happen, and I imagine it's going to be for leaning towards a lot more investment. Just because of it's been successful. It's done well on the field and I think they want more of that, but same point too, you have more games, like things like Leagues Cup and a condensed schedule, you're going to get more opportunities for young players too. But yes, I'm always keeping an eye on what they're doing at the youth levels too, because to me, that's always been what's separated apart from like the old NASL days, is really building something here that young Americans can aspire to, not a place where young Americans can go and just watch foreigners play.
Yeah, no question about it. And I think from a competitive standpoint, you nailed it there too. The coaches have got to have deeper, more competitive rosters to navigate these tournaments, Open Cup, Leagues Cup, CONCACAF Champions Cup, which we really rarely ever can win. Brian, as always, thank you very much for coming on tonight. We appreciate
Thanks very much, Glenn.
Keep up the great work. We'll do it again, and we're looking forward to more good reports for you from you each and every week. It's American Soccer Now. Follow Brian's writings there at Brian Schroeder. Brian, thanks so much for coming on tonight.
Thanks very much, Glenn. Anytime.
All right. He's the best, and that's going to do it tonight here. By the way, quick word here for Pitch 25 in downtown right near the Dynamo Stadium and Shell Energy Stadium. It's the largest soccer beer garden in Houston. It's the place for you. Over 70 screens, 100 beers on tap, indoor soccer field. Pitch 25, the ultimate fan destination. Listen, place is going to be packed for Copa America, the Euros, qualifiers, Olympics, you name it. It's going to be packed down there. Head over to 2120 Walker and Edo. It's Houston's go-to soccer bar, Pitch 25. You get the podcast of this show, Spotify, Apple, and Google, or right here at ESPN975.com. And as always, a big thank you to everybody for tuning in tonight. Don't forget, we are back at 6 o'clock Central Time this coming Wednesday for more of the best in soccer talk. It's on ESPN975. It's Soccer Matters, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. Thanks for tuning in tonight.